The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
And this is the Magic Mike Show, episode 543, presented by FanDuel. Mr. Samich.
Should I do a big DK horses? No. First off, I got to kick it off. Congratulations. Your television debut last night, Magic. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was awesome. An amazing experience. I'll go into more detail at a later time, but because we do have to, Mike has a hard out here in 55 minutes. So we want to make sure we do plenty of time talking about the Keeneland late pick five on Friday. But awesome experience. I couldn't have asked for a better first day of work there. Literally everybody made sure that I met was like, are you happy? Are you comfortable? They wanted to set me up for success. I felt like I was set up for success better than I ever could have hoped for. And a special shout out to Jose Contreras. He's at Los Ponies on Twitter. It's his birthday today, so happy birthday to him. He's actually headed to Vegas. He's going to be visiting Circa a lot this weekend, and he was a great co-host. He really was a great person to introduce me to everything. So it was a lot of fun, and I am back at it again tonight. If you're watching live or listening on Thursday, I'll be back with Joaquin Jaime and Kurt Hoover from 5:30 tonight. So see what a three-man team is going to be like now for my second day.
Little three-man weave on NFL draft night. I like it. It's always fun. Yeah, it's going to be we're doing the show at noon, obviously, here Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, a couple hours earlier. I would say the Thursday schedule will be fluid for the time being on what time the Magic Mike Show is going to be going on. Appreciate to everyone who reached out, said they would happily fill in for Magic. So we've got a couple guests lined up for days that Magic can't make it. So that was nice. Oh, yeah, man. People already want to jump in.
And everybody's already... I'm not gone. By the way, special thanks to Aaron for filling for me last week. I was one day removed, about 24 hours removed from my wisdom teeth getting out. Still a little sore, but at least I can show up today.
I like it. And Monday, we are going to be doing a special Derby episode, so make sure you check that out. We're going to rip through the entire field, talk about the horses that we have as win considerations, horses we like in the tries and the supers, and the ones we are completely chucking. I'm excited to talk through that with you. I'm excited to have the post position draw, because that changes for me so much of what long shots I want to use, horses that I'm going to chuck, horses I'm going to consider moving up into the win spot. So excited to have that happen over the weekend as well, so that we can jump right into it on Monday.
It's I'm very excited about that one as well. I will also, just a quick plug, I usually don't need to advertise to all of you who are currently watching us right now, but at least our regulars, you know, every show that we do here on YouTube is free. There are a lot of other YouTube channels with great information about horse racing. I'm not going to knock them. A lot of them are trying to charge for webinars or for, you know, special videos or something, doing exactly what we're going to do for free. So feel free to give them your money. I'm not going to say don't do it. It's your money. Do with it what you want. But you can come back here. Mike and I will do all of that stuff for free. And I promise we'll be at least as exciting as probably 95% of them.
Oh, I'll take more exciting than 95%. Come on, man. We got the energy. We got the action. We're fun. You know, we got the inappropriate jokes that fly. It's all good.
Oh, yeah, I got to make sure I separate Magic on Racing Dudes YouTube channel and Curtis Kellewart on FanDuel Racing. But speaking of racing, we've got Keeneland's closing day meet. Closing day is already here. I feel like we just got started here. But Keeneland's closing day meet, or closing day of the spring meet, is Friday, April 26th. We're going to cover the late pick five. That's races 6 through 10. Let's get into it, buddy. Riders up. It's definitely overload time here, because a couple of these races are super wacky, but we'll see how we do here. Kicking things off, the late pick five on Friday, April 26th, race six. It's an N1X allowance race for 8 older males sprinting 6 furlongs on the dirt. Where'd you go on top?
Give me the 4-horse Miracle Worker on top here, 6-1. Brad Cox on the training job. We got a situation here where it looks like there's going to be quite a bit of speed signed on. I think the pace is going to be pretty good. And Miracle Worker projects to get a pretty good trip right behind that pace. Does have enough early turn of foot that I don't think it's going to be an issue to stay close, and has enough kick. We saw that in the maiden breaking score at Oaklawn here earlier this year. It's a 4-year-old who was highly thought of as a 3-year-old, was a heavily bet favorite, 2-1, ended up running third to Mulliken, who we'll talk about here in a second. second, and then ran fourth as a heavy favorite back in the next maiden special weight. Ended up, you know, with three next out winners in front of him. So two very good races in those first two races. Comes back, wins the maiden special weight last time out, and I think projects to get just the perfect trip here. Like I said, I'd expect an improvement here. This is an Into Mischief horse that Gary Mary West homebred and thought very highly of, did not decide to sell. I think we're going to get Miracle Worker's best effort, and I think the pace projects to set up well for him.
Yeah, you nailed all the reasons. So Mike and I are in full agreement here. We choose two horses. We switched the order of who we liked on top better, but that tends to be the case if we agree on the same horses here. We just flip the order there. I'll just kind of yes, Angie, there. The buyers, if you're playing buyers, they're a little low compared to some of these, but there is a lot of upside. He's only had three starts, and we haven't seen him since February. So it seems like he has trouble staying healthy, which is unfortunate because it seems like he's got talent. But there is a ton of upside here, and you nailed it. There's a lot of speed in this race, and you know that the number one horse, One Giant Leap, if as long as he breaks clean, is going to go to the front. He's a Wesley Ward trainee at Keeneland with Johnny V aboard. They're 34% together. This horse is going to be even money, sub even money when they go off there. So neither of us are using the one. And I think there's a lot of speed in here. I think Mike does too. That's going to soften things up for him and set up for either the four to come off or the other horse we're both using, my top pick. The number two, Mulliken at 3-1. Flavian Pratt takes them out for the first time for Rudy Brissett. This horse has won gate to wire in the past, but that debut race at Oaklawn Park, the same spot where Miracle Worker was in it, where they were a neck apart for second and third, and really a nose away, both of them, from winning the race. That race, he was eighth, five lengths off. He was off slow and came flying at the end. This horse has the ability to close. He has the ability to sit off the pace a little bit. Just because he won gate to wire doesn't mean that's his best running set. He also, by the way, that day broke from the rail. It's almost like his hand was forced. Go. Wasn't super fast, 22-4, the opener there. So I think he's going to set off, just being a pocket spot. Flavian Pratt's very smart. He's going to wait and see who among all of the horses press on One Giant Leap. If nobody does, you can bet your ass Pratt is going to put that horse right up there on One Giant Leap and be ready to get first run on him.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I also love the first three races from this horse. I thought there was a nice improvement from start one to start two to start three. Again, faced very good fields in those three starts, jumped up into the Maxwell, ran second to Rivet, who's obviously a very well-accomplished horse at that level too. It just feels like this one's ready to roll. The break was clearly what this horse needed after the five starts, including Stakes Company in the fifth start. One Giant Leap, I respect a lot on the inside. But I don't, you look through this horse, and one of the things I look back at is, where did they start this horse? Well, it was a Ward that debuts at Keeneland, but debuts in a maiden claimer. It was 150,000, but it's still a maiden claimer. Then they drop down into a maiden claimer at Turfway. Then they run in a claiming race at Keeneland. Then we go up, and then we're going to run in two allowances. It's not even that we're running an N1X competition. This is going to be the sixth race of this horse's career. It's the first time it faces allowance level field. To me, there's enough to kind of knock here on the favorite that I want to go somewhere else. I do have the one in third, but I felt there was a gap between the two and the four before you got to the one.
Yep, I agree. And again, that price is going to make it. If you wanted to use the one here, and with Warlike Goddess in race eight, if you're going to use her, you almost have to single in both of these spots here, because your payouts, if both of those horses win, they're not going to be super great. I saw Rodney mention the seven Moreau. Rodney likes, thinks this is a spread race. And, Mike and I are both thinking spread race later, but not going to knock you for trying to spread here. Moreau's 15-1, adds blinkers here. And that's kind of what made him interesting. He also is a horse that likes to close or come from off the pace. What's interesting, Mike, he's a Spitestown, son of Spitestown, who's a champion sprinter, who's only ever gone 6.5 furlongs once, and then it was a mile and an eighth, 16. Theoretically, his pedigree says he should be doing one-turn races like this. He's never run this short. I was interested in him to possibly hit the board, but I feel like this is a prep almost for McKeever, the trainer, sending him longer at Churchill Downs at his next start.
See, I would agree with you, except they added the blinkers. And that makes me a little more interested. You mentioned Bred for the Distance. Actually, has the second highest Tomlinson rating going the 6 furlong distance, which is surprising considering he has never gone 6 furlongs in his career. So if you're going for a bomb here, I do think the 7 makes the most sense. I thought the 6 was a little bit interesting as well, right to the inside. You get Reilu for Dallas Stewart. This horse getting back into the Dallas Stewart barn wasn't great, but kind of turned a corner there in Laurel when it went in the Arnold Delacour barn. So we'll see if he can get it back here. I like the workout 2 back specifically at Churchill for the 6. But again, I felt like there was kind of a gap between those top two and then the next set of horses that I would consider using. So I don't I don't hate the idea of using the 7. I don't hate the idea of using the 6. If you're spreading, I think it's really hard to use the 1. You mentioned if One Giant Leap wins and if Warlike Goddess wins, this thing's not going to pay a ton. So for me, 2-4, I don't hate the idea of adding the 6-7 if you do want to, if you don't spread in the two races, which I am going 5 deep in.
Yep, fully agree. If you're watching Keeneland live right now while we're on air, Curtis Manlow says that the 10 wins the last today at Keeneland, might get a Racing Dudes tattoo if you have Aaron's permission to use the logo. I promise you have Aaron's permission to use the logo to get that tattoo. I would love to see that, Curtis Manlow. Let's move on to the second leg of this Late Pick 5 Friday, April 26th, race 7. You talked about workouts, Mike. This is going to be a race where you got to watch the workouts for some of these because we got 12 maiden males going 6 furlongs on the dirt. They're all maidens. They're all 3 years old. A few of them haven't started before. Where'd you go on top?
I went with one of the first-time starters. Give me the two-horse on the inside world record here on top. Brissett and Pratt teaming up in back-to-back races here. I thought this one has a sneaky good workout tab. When you look back, it had a bullet and its first two works that are on the tab. Then you kind of see it switch over. The last 5 workouts now have been at Keeneland. 4 of those 5 have been sub-12-second workouts. Love the fact that we went 47-2 breezing, 4 and 5 back, but then went 47 flat out of a gate, 2 back. This horse seems absolutely tilted up. Don't worry about that workout in the last one. I'm not overly concerned. That's Brissett's style. He's not going to fire the horse big time off a nice workout in the previous one. Even the 5 furlong work ends up 3-31 on that day. Gunrunner, very good first out sire. This horse sells for $410,000 to Windstar, so you have to love the connections there. Brissett more than capable, 12% with $1.50 ROI first time out, so not worried about that. And first Lasix, 14 of them. 36% with a $3.43 ROI. That's what we are getting here on this 2-horse. So give me the 2 at 6-1 world record on top.
So I went 3 deep here. Mike went 5 deep. Mike used all 3 of my horses. And this time we agree on the top pick, number 2 world record at 6-1. I also can tell you from watching workout videos that 3 back, so all those 4 furlong works, the one time he went 5 furlongs, his work partner was Mulliken, the horse we just talked about in the last race, who we're both using, and we went 2 deep there. My top pick, your second choice. So, yeah, we're riding the Brissett Pratt Daddy train for this opening daily double, but for good reason. Both of these horses seem to fit very well. Next up for me was the 6 Stinger B at 7-2. This horse ran the career best effort last out in the 4th career start. It was the first time in the Nacho Correa's barn. That guy, as of today, April 25th, coming into these races, 3-11 at the meet with winners, 6-11 in the money.
Pretty good.
This horse, pretty damn good. He's always sneaky at Keeneland. He's one of those trainers you talk about a lot, Mike, that targets the Keeneland meet, gets the horses geared up for it. This will be 3rd off the layoff, 2nd time for the Correa's barn, 2nd time with Irad riding. I don't think 7-2 is what we'll get, but there is another horse in here we're using that will take a lot of money as a first-time starter. I really like that 3 furlong workout here on April 20th. 35-2 for 3 furlongs. The best of 66 horses that day. That was Correa's going, okay, let's get you ready for a win today, boy. That's the 6 Stinger B.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what the price is on the 6, because you mentioned that you teased the first time starter, the 9 Alcove, who's my second horse, Brad Cox, Franz Giroux. This just feels like one that's going to fire first out. Judmont, Homebred. So again, another one where you're like, yep, this is probably the solid connections here. We know they kept the horse versus selling, and they do both. So the fact that they kept it and gave it to Brad Cox kind of tips the hand that they think this is probably one of their better ones. Twirling Candy, 18% first out sire. You got Bernardini on the bottom. Maybe wants more distance, but probably is pretty fast anyway, I think is the best way to kind of explain Alcove. I think you do see this horse stretch out in the future versus staying sprinting. But then you look at the work 2 back, the bullet on April 13th at Keeneland, 5 furlongs out of a gate, 59-2, best of 42 workers. Clearly some talent on this horse. I think you have to respect Alcove. And to me, the money and how it falls between the 6 and the 9 can be very interesting here. I have the 6 and 4th, though. I did sprinkle in a couple prices here. And for me, because I liked prices was the reason I ended up not just going 2, 6, 9. You want to say anything about the 9 before I move on?
No, you absolutely. One thing I'll say, there's one sibling, older sibling that's been to the races, won the 2nd career start. It was going 1 mile over this exact course. Everything else you nailed.
Thank you very much. Well, let's go to the 4 horse here. Schwarzenmeier. Schwartzmeyer.
Yeah.
This one's coming in from California, and I thought it was interesting that this horse got bet first time out, and then second time out, I thought ran pretty well against a field that was better. Now, the horse didn't get off well in that second start specifically and wasn't great in the first start, but we're adding Lasix here for the first time for the four horse, and I like the fact that we've seen some consistent works back really since early March here, where this horse was able to outwork a lot of the horses in California, which are fast work horses. Now we ship across the country for Sadler here. Rosario picks up the mount. First time Lasix, 21%. We're adding that for this one. I don't mind the time off. Sadler shipped two horses for this Keeneland meet. This will be his third runner. Both of them ran second and really could have won the races that they were in. Now we're getting 15-1 on a horse that's broken slow twice. If we can correct the break, I think Schwartzmeyer should not be anywhere near 15-1 against this field. I expect him to take a step forward. So wanted to include the four horse here at a big price and then go right to the inside as well here. Lean Music Machine. This is one for a small barn. Daniel Leach does not generally get big time riders. Saez decides to debut on this rider. Has a couple good workouts, and McLean's Music, one of the better first out sires as well. This is one of the higher Tomlinsons in the field for the distance at 418 or 412 too. So I'm going to take a little bit of a shot here with both the 2-3 Lean Music Machine and the 4 Schwartzmeyer at 12-1 and 15-1 respectively.
So what's funny is that Mike has a single. I don't later in the sequence. You could probably guess which that is. If I had singled, I probably would have used both of these horses in here. I really like them in this spot. Sadler, I probably have the four horse fifth, and it would be maybe not into my ticket. But it is interesting that he sends this horse out here to Keeneland after not really being involved in the races either time out in California as a two-year-old. So we'll see what happens. Plenty of strong works at Santa Anita leading up to this. The 3 is by McLean's Music. He only had the one start, but it was that ultra impressive debut win for him. So that got a sibling that won a race at age 2. So all good things there. Before we move on real quick, Rudy Brissett has two horses in this race. Neither of us are using the 5 Bexter, who is also a debuter. Has Tyler Gaffalione aboard, who I think coming in. Yeah. He and I read right now are tied atop the jockey standings with 15 wins apiece. I passed on this horse because Audible is 5 for 85 with debuting horses and did not win his debut either. And that was against New York Bred Company. Developed into an amazing horse at 3, but wasn't super strong at age 2. Is that why you left him off as well?
Yes. And so Audible, you mentioned it, terrible first time out starter. That sire, that's been a problem for him. His horse has been running well second, third, fourth time out, but that first start has been a struggle for Audible horses. Also, the fact that this horse stayed at Turfway Park until really right up until the race. I mean, April 6th was the last work before coming to Keeneland. So it was one work over the track, and I thought it was a pretty good work on April 20th. But I the fact that we stayed at Turfway Park for so long before making the move over kind of tells me this one's probably a cut below the 2 in world record. The fact that Pratt's on the 2, I realize Gaffalione leading jockey right now, not Brissett's leading jockey. He goes to Pratt with his better horses. So to me, the hand kind of got tipped between where the 5 was working and who was riding the 5, that the 2 is the better of these two horses.
Great race again. Yeah, the maiden special weight, last maiden special weight of the Keeneland Spring Meet. And this is for the 3-year-old males. Let's move on. The third leg of the late pick 5, Friday, April 26th. The main event, race 8. It's the Grade 3 Bewitched Stakes. A field of 9 older fillies and mares going 1.5 miles on the turf. Warlight Goddess is back at age 7. That alone is unbelievable that you would have a champion mare that's earned $2.5 million back at age 7. She's going to try to win this race for a record 4th. Straight year. No horse has ever won 4 editions of a stakes in Keeneland's history. She could do it this time, and you're going to single her.
I am going to single her, and I'm going to go one step further and say next year this is going to be named the Warlike Goddess Grade 3 race instead of the Bewitched.
Oh, yes, please.
I don't see how you don't give it to her if she's able to do it. I don't love singling horses like this unless I'm uber confident in them. I am pretty confident that Warlike Goddess will win. The other issue for me, Viraga, the 8 horse, really is the only other horse I considered. And that's your second choice in this race. And if you've watched this show enough, you know if I'm not going to single these horses when I like them, I'm using a 10-1, 20-1, something like that to try and really spice up those payouts. To me, using the 2 choices when you have the 6 horse who's 3-5 on top, kind of silly to use the 2 shortest choices in the board. So I ended up singling Warlike Goddess. The big issue here, the pace. Viraga is going to be the pace in this race. We'll see if she's able to go gate to wire. Keeneland's turf course is going 3 turns, played very, very fair. So I don't have a huge concern around that. I like that Alvarado's on Warlike Goddess in this spot. I thought he did a very good job riding her. I know that we've had some issues with Rosario's and some of his rides he's had on her. She loves the distance, 7 for 10 at the distance with a second and a third. Loves the track, 3 for 4 over Keeneland's course. You mentioned it, won this race 3 times. The distance hits her right between the eyes. No issue with her coming off the layoff. She's won off the layoff multiple times, including this race. Give me Warlike Goddess 3 to 5, not getting creative with a single.
I used her, put her on top. I didn't single her. And my biggest concern is I feel like last year we started to see a few cracks in the armor with her, right? She struggled in the New York Stakes, the Grade One New York at Belmont, just never, ever ran a step. And I don't think that was Hall of Fame jockey Joel Rosario's fault. Make sure he put some spect on his name. She lost the Glen Falls when I thought that she really shouldn't have either. At Saratoga, got caught by McCulloch there. She did rebound and win the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic against males for the second straight year. Breeders' Cup turf was probably just too much. I mean, that was one of the best Breeders' Cup turfs we've seen in quite some time, really since Enable came over and won it, I thought. So I'll forgive her for that, but I am worried at age 7. If she's lost a step and a couple of horses in here takes a step forward, she could get beat. I'm not rooting for it. But from a ticket perspective, I'm going to go with the number 5, Lovely Princess, who is the third choice here at 8-1. She'll be double-digit odds because of Warlike Goddess in here. But this is a McPeak horse that you're getting at a price, who's 2 for 3 at Keeneland, has a second going a mile and a half. Her best work hasn't been at a mile and a half, but she was second in the Kirtana Stakes at Churchill Downs. This is her first start, really, as a 5-year-old. Her last start of the form cycle was in January at Fairgrounds. So she took some time off. She comes back in this tough spot. And every trainer who entered a horse in here knew Warlike Goddess was going to come into this race and try to win it. McPeak throws her in here. I think the layoff has done this horse some good. And she has run very well off a layoff. If you look back last year, she came off of a 5-month layoff and won going a mile and an eighth over this turf course. It was N1X Allowance Company. This is a huge step up in terms of who the top horse is. But outside of Warlike Goddess, I think if you wanted to play a horse underneath, there's a lot of good price options you can go with. I just went with the 5 Lovely Princess.
Yeah, just to poo-poo your Warlike Goddess hate, the Belmont race, the New York, 1.25 miles, that's the only time Warlike Goddess has gone 2 turns in her career. So that I thought was awfully interesting.
That's right.
The one two-turn race in there is the one she struggled. And Hall of Famer jockey Joel Rosario had to check her twice in a 7-horse field when she lost that race. So let's not the other race. What was that? The Glens Falls. Literally had to check twice in a 7-horse field and was ranked early and then got caught because of it. So let's not.
And he never went back on board again. After that.
And he got taken off the horse. So let's just make sure we call out those two anomalies in those two races for Warlike Goddess before we start slandering her. Outside of that, I mean, you look through. She's a machine. She beat the boys in the Turf Classic. The other two races in Smamich in between there, she won the Bewitch, which we talked about. She ran 3rd in the Breeders' Cup Turf with Rebel's Romance and Stone Age in front of her, and then ran 7th in the Breeders' Cup Turf when it was like impossible for her at Santa Anita. That was not the race that she wanted to be running. So, I think she's pretty good, and I'm not too worried about anyone else in this field beating her. I do think Vergara, whatever, is the horse that beats her by going gate to wire, if anyone does. But I think Warlike Goddess rumbles home and gets the W here to kick off her 7-year-old season.
Rodney's going to use Warlike Goddess with the 1 Chop Chop. You're not using Chop Chop in here. The horse is 2 for 3 lifetime on turf, and the 1 loss was 3rd by a half length, so she was right there and didn't have the cleanest of trips. I think she's interesting. I just don't see the trip that beats Warlike Goddess unless Warlike Goddess just absolutely doesn't show up here.
Yeah, also the distance is a concern. Never gone a mile and a half. She's also never faced older horses on turf, which I think is relevant as well. So this is going to be the first time she's taking on older on turf. All those turf races were early in her career when she was either 2 or 3. So Chop Chop, I think you're going to get the right price. So I wouldn't talk you off her because I think you're going to get more than 20-1 on her. But to me, there's too many question marks, especially against a champion like Warlike Goddess.
Watch out, see how she does here. And if Cox brings her back on turf, because her last 4 races coming in this were on the synthetic, and she 2 wins, 2 seconds, good efforts there. Watch where she shows up next if he brings her to New York or Pimlico or something like that for a turf race. All right, Mike, you guys didn't use this word last week, and it kind of ticked me off a little bit, but the penultimate leg of the Magic Mike Late Pick 5 Friday, April 26th at Keeneland. It's an N3X optional claimer for 12 older fillies and mares, sprinting that tricky dicky distance of 7 furlongs on the dirt. You were spreading like crazy. Who you got on top?
Yeah, this race is a mess, man. We're going to go prices all over the place, so get ready to get some numbers thrown at you here. We're going to go on top with the 8-horse unifying 8-1 on the morning line. Riley Mott needs some respect on his name. He has done a wonderful job training early on in his career, and he's currently clicking off here at Keeneland at 33%. He's got 6 starters, so not a huge sample size, but 2 wins and a second place finish in there. This horse dropping out of grade 3 company to run into this, ran into red carpet lady Olivia Darling in that last race. Those are two very, very good sprinters. It likes the 7 furlong distance, has a win and a second going 7 furlongs, so we know that won't be a problem for her here. To me, it's just, if you look at what she did ending her 3-year-old season, where she ran $100,000 optional allowances, won one of those, jumped up, won $172,000 stakes at Ellis, going 7 furlongs, and then ran in back-to-back-to-back stakes down in Florida. One of those was at a mile where she ran into Mary Quite Contrary, who is a very good horse down there. She lost to Chi-Town Lady by a neck in what was a tough race at Tampa, and then ran against Olivia Darling in Red Carpet Ready. She gets a drop in class today. She gets the pace set up that supports her as well. I think she's able to come flying late and get the job done. So I'll take unifying 8-1 on top.
So I went 3 deep here. 2 of the 3 horses I used, you did as well. And that's going to be one of those going to be unifying. It was almost hard for me to pull the trigger on her because losing that race at Tampa, the Minaret Stakes, we covered that sequence. That was, let's see, February. So that would have been Sam F. Davis Stakes Day. That one just, she got caught by Chi-Town Lady, who we both thought had no chance. And it really, I'm still a little mad about that, but I'll agree with you. Lots of things to like about her. That 7 furlong win was in the slop at Ellis, but it was at this distance. And you look at the breeding, she's built for this kind of a 7 furlong distance. A horse that can go a mile, you cut him back a little bit, it's a good spot for her. My top pick did not make your ticket, however. That's the number 3, Swall for Phil D'Amato. This is a horse that's been running exclusively on synthetic and turf. Much better on the synth with all 5 exacta finishes, including 3 wins coming in 7 starts there. But the last 2 starts were the first 2 that she had with Phil D'Amato aboard, and they were 6 furlong sprints. One of them was a victory that she got via disqualification. She got 2nd last time out by a head with a career best buyer, again on the synth, in the Queen Stakes, just missed by a head to BG Warrior. She was a much bigger price that day. She was 21-1. She's 8-1 on the morning line here, but I thought that it was a very solid effort from her. I think that with the 7 furlong distance, a lot of these horses will turn into stumble bunnies past the 3/16 pole. I know she's going to come running with a bit of a move. It's just a question of what positioning does she get. I don't want to see her 5.5 lengths back like she was in the Queen Stakes, but that race 3 back at Golden Gate, an allowance race when she was 1.5 lengths behind early, that's the kind of trip I want her to see. And with this inner draw here from post 3, I think it helps her take a step forward. She also has that 5 furlong work that was best of 30 last time out at Keeneland. So she's working very solid on the Keeneland dirt. Another work that's 46-4, best of 75. So never tried dirt. I'm getting 8-1. I think she'll float up just a little bit on her, taking a chance with the 3 Swall.
Yeah, the last thing you said there was the concern. Never tried dirt. That was, to me, was one of those things where she had multiple chances to do so. Ran at Golden Gate, obviously doesn't have a dirt track there, but then went down to Del Mar for the summer, and they decided in the Mathis barn then not to go to the dirt. Now, you mentioned the 2 workouts. Those are the scary ones for me. Even the workout on April 1st, where she was 3/26, very good work there as well. So you feel like she's ready to go. To me, it's the fact that she's never been on dirt, and she probably needs to improve over those 2 6 furlong races. Also never gone 7 furlongs. Both times she went over the 6 furlong mark, she tired. Both of those, again, were on turf, so it's hard to then say that's like apples to apples. But is Breadwell for the distance, like Ghost Zapper, should have no problem with 7 furlongs, but still have a little bit of a concern there. I liked the other D'Amato. It was one of the last horses on the ticket for me, and Princess Adelaide on the inside here. That was the one I went to, but I was between Princess Adelaide and Swale as one of the last horses on the ticket.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. The 3rd and final horse for me, we're both going Bombs Away on the number 6, 2 item saver. Now, 21 morning line. I'm not going to sit here and say this is a horrible morning line. I'm just going to say, I don't think we get anywhere close to 20-1 on this horse, right? Like, this horse has been so solid since moving to Correa's. 3/4 in sprint races, returned from a similar layoff that we're getting here over this course and distance against N1X Company. 13.5 lengths she won by. I think she might like this course. I think she might like 7 furlongs. I like that Jose Ortiz is picking up the mount and that she's going to get back on Lasix. The only time that she lost sprinting for Correa's, she didn't have Lasix in the grade 2 inside information. What odds do we get on two-item saver here? 10-1, 8-1?
I was going to say 6-8-1, somewhere in that range. She also has a win at 7 furlongs over this course, won by 13 lengths. Now, there were only 4 horses in that field, so you don't want to, you know, completely throw it away. But, you know, they still was able to win over the distance. By the way, that's also her career best buyer was over this track at this distance. There's just a lot to like here. And the fact you said, like you said, Jose Ortiz picking up the mount. They've teamed up 7 times in 2023 and 2024. They have won 3 of those 7 races. So pretty good sign there as well. Also working well. Should get the setup. Have no problem with the distance. There's a lot to like about the 6. 20-1 is a pipe dream. And you could tell that, look, this was a tough race to make the morning line. Your favorite's 9-2. Your second and third choices are 5-1. I mean, clearly this is going to be a very fluid betting board because of everything that we're seeing. So I'm with you on the 6 there. This was one where I thought you kind of had to have it on the ticket there. I mentioned the 1, Princess Adelaide. This is my favorite speed horse in the race. We have talked that there's going to be quite a bit of speed, but I think the fact that D'Amato's sending this one in here and we're getting the rail and Cedillo tells me we are 100% going from the rail. So if any speed holds, to me, it's Princess Adelaide that holds. I'll take the 10-1 number there. And then my other horse I'm using, this was the 3rd horse on my ticket here. And well, actually, I should talk about the 2nd one. I haven't even talked about my 2nd pick. Give me the 12, Royal Take Charge, all the way on the outside, Al Star. We get Ray Lou up. We know we love some Ray Lou on this show. This is a horse where you go back in the 1-time sprinting. This horse was at Churchill Downs on debut, was able to go essentially gate to wire. Was a little over $3.50 to 1 on that day. Got the win. Built off of that, went 1/16, ran well. 1/8, ran well. 1/8, won the race. Jumped into grade 2 company. We're getting back to sprinting here at 7 furlongs, but this is a horse that's shown tactical speed every step of the way and a killer closing kick as well. I like the outside draw for this type of horse. You're probably not going to save a ton of ground, but you're going to be able to be forwardly placed and then get a run on them. 5-1, I thought, was a more than fair price. And if you look at the numbers here, stall is 16% coming back off this style of layoff. We're also dropping down to the 2nd lowest weight this horse has ever carried at 118. So like that as well for this one, first off the layoff in the 5-year-old season. And then give me the 10 horse here, Braganza. Braganza. For Eddie Keneally here, Saez picks up the mount. And this one is a lot of, hey, let's just isolate when Saez has ridden this horse. He's ridden it 5 times. 2 of those have been wins. 1 of those at Keeneland, going 7 furlongs. This is a horse that has races in the past that win it, that has tactical speed, that should sit a very good trip here in that 2nd flight right behind the leaders. And again, the price is right here. Braganza getting 20-1 for a Saez horse that I think is live off the layoff that's had success at Keeneland. Also 3-for-4 at the distance in the career. So you know you like the 7 furlongs. You know you like the track. You know the jockey knows how to handle it, and you're getting a monster price of 20-1. So I ended up with 1, 6, 10, 8, 12. 1, 6, 8, 10, 12.
I did look at the 10. That was probably my 4th horse up in this, another 20-1 price. And because you nailed it, man, the 3-for-4 here. The only time that she lost, yes, it was over this course and distance, but 2nd career start, first time facing maidens, first time in protected because she debuted for a $75,000 claiming tag. And she broke a little slowly. Like, there's a lot of excuses there. And if you scratch that off and, like you said, isolate the 7 furlong races, isolate when Saez was aboard, she's been really solid. If she's ready off the layoff, the work suggests that she should be fit enough for this spot. It's a really big win. Neither of us used Rodney's aggressive single. That's the number 4 nom de plume. For me, this was I'm going to pass. This is a first time dirt horse, so I'm not going to say it's because of that, because my top pick is first time dirt. A horse is 3-for-5 lifetime, is 2-for-3 with a 2nd on the synthetic course. Paulo Lobo's been so ice cold here when he usually is one like Correas that'll pop up with a couple of surprising winners. For him to be, now it's the penultimate day of this spring meet here, and still be over.
Yeah.
His barn's just a little cold right now. So I'm going to pass on him, but I'm not saying it's a bad pick. It's a very aggressive single, just not for me.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I looked at this one as a price play. I just like the others more. Would need to take a big step forward here, 2nd out as a 4-year, but as we always talk about, that is a logical step forward angle. Uncle Mo, Bernardini, 7 furlongs should be no problem. Dirt should be no problem. I wish it was like Torres. I wish it was not Machado. And I realized, you know, Machado rides for him quite a bit and does well. They've run combined 23 times for 22% win percentage, but Lobo's horses usually have someone like Gaffleon or have someone like an Ortiz when they are absolutely ready to fire. And I wish I had saw one of those. And that was one of the reasons I ended up not using the 4 in this spot. But I wouldn't talk you off Nom de Plume. Like, that's not one where I'd be like, nope, that's a terrible pick and slam it. It'd be one of those where I'm like, yeah, I get it. Just not for me.
Shadi likes Nom de Plume in here as well. And speaking of Shadi, she likes to Frankenstein ticket our picks together if they're a little close. If you want a Frankenstein ticket together, our picks for this sequence, single Warlike Goddess, and like hit the all button or go as deep as you can afford to in this race, because this is where Mike and I said, like, I used three horses and Mike agreed on two of them, but so many ways you can go. It feels like a bomb could definitely come in and really spice things up here. And if Warlike Goddess wins, when she wins, hopefully, it'll make this thing pay more than probably, you know, $5 profit. So it's a good way to play that one. Fifth and final leg of the Keeneland Late Pick 5 Friday, April 26th, the very last race of the Keeneland Spring Meet, race number 10. We're going to go a mile and 3/16 on the dirt. We've got 11 three-year-olds at this level here. N1X level, I feel like you could spread here, but we have some good agreements here again. Where'd you go on top?
Yeah, we do. Give me the three-horse bandwagon. Hopefully our boy Geis, who's a part owner in this one, can go out a winner at Keeneland as winning the last race. And this is a D'Amato horse. We talked about D'Amato shipping over, especially on turf to the Midwest. That's what Little Red Feather's doing here with Bandwagon. I thought rode kind of sneaky or ran sneaky good in the last two races, the first two times facing winners, even though wasn't able to finish as nicely as I'm sure they would have liked. Specifically, the one two back was a mess. Like, if you go back and watch that race at a mile, there's so many excuses in that one. Last race just didn't seem to have it. I think Bandwagon runs well today. You get Irad Ortiz for D'Amato, not a combination that you see very often. Just four times in the last 2 years, they do have a win over those four times. Rode this specific horse four back, which I think is also awfully interesting. The horse ran third that day. A guy named Joe ran second, went on to win their next time. Just kind of got out kicked, but that was out of the 12 out of 12 post going a mile at Del Mar, which is an absolutely atrocious post to have. Now you draw the three at Keeneland. I think the added distance is a positive here for this horse. The Bowie, the grandfather, was one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive horse right now in Europe to breed to, one that loves going longer. That's a positive too. I think it's all systems go here. And I like the price at 9-2. I was surprised that that Bandwagon wasn't the favorite on the morning line.
Yeah, we love this one. We'd love to see Geis get the second win for this horse. I misspoke. Mile 3/16 on turf. I was reading the Equibase thing where it said if it gets taken off, they'll do a mile 3/16 on the main track. This one's on turf. It's where this horse fits. And this horse fits very well. The Irad factor, like you said, really, you got to love it there. Almost won, like you mentioned, the last time Irad was aboard. You went three deep. You used all three of the four horses I'm using. So let's talk about another one in this spot. Just to the inside, the number two, Domingo. My boy Brendan Walsh doesn't have Tyler Gaffalione aboard. So I almost said, well, if T. Gaff isn't riding, then chuck it. But you know what? Luis Saez, he's pretty good too, Mike. This horse exits a win with Saez aboard, breaking the maiden, going a mile and an eighth on the Gulfstream Park turf. The two races that Saez has been aboard, the two best in the career, also was aboard two back for a synthetic race. I like that this horse was close to the pace, wasn't on it, but was close. And when asked, was able to get past and then hold off the closers. That's the only way that you've got to have that ability to hold off the closers if you're a pocket horse at Keeneland on the turf, because you'll pass the front runner, but those closers come flying like every single time. So I'm going to use this horse. You also like that Brendan Walsh is doing very well at the meet. 6/23 with winners, 11/23 in the money. And when horses win last out for Brendan Walsh, 20%, 1 in 5 chance that this horse is going to go out and repeat next out. So number two, Domingo for me.
Yeah, this was my second pick as well. And I don't think you can stress how good that mile and eighth was at Gulfstream last time. Not only, you know, did you mention that Domingo was forwardly placed here? Well, he was three wide on the first turn and four wide on the second turn, and they went home in 11.2 seconds for the final furlong as well. They were flying home. So to be able to be wide on both turns and be able to hold everyone off by going that fast late, I thought was really impressive. The added distance was obviously a positive for this horse, stretching out from a mile and 16th in the synthetic to the mile and an eighth over the turf. The extra distance shouldn't be a problem. This is American Pharoah out of a Thunder Gulch mare. Both those horses love the distance, so I don't think that you're going to see any issues here going mile and 3/16 over the turf. The trip should be very good. Saez should be able to save every lick of ground and then fire around the far turn, and you just hope that you're able to hold off the closers here. But Domingo 3-1, I think, is a fair price on a horse that is a very logical winner.
The third and final horse we agreed on here, let's talk about the number 8, Catch a Wave. Chad Brown on turf at Keeneland with Flavian Pratt aboard. We've got to use them. But hey, guess what? They're 36% winners together with a positive ROI. You can get Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt at Keeneland in the last year and just play them flat and turn a profit. That's crazy. So we're going to use this horse. Won the debut. It was at Tampa Bay Downs, but Chad's issues with the Gulfstream Park turf course in the past are well documented. So I don't hate that this horse debuted over there. Had to come from off the pace to get the win. It was the only turf race on the day at Tampa, so I couldn't compare it to other races that day to see how the track was playing. But Tampa was notoriously a hard, the few times that we did cover it and play it, it was a hard track to close on the turf. Like if a horse got loose up front, or just even not even that loose, just kind of ran in place up front, they were able to usually keep it. So I thought the fact this horse was able to rally from off of it to get the win there was good. And I love that Flavien Prat is going to pick up the mount here.
Yeah, this is one of those where you kind of have to decide, okay, what am I going to make of the Chad Brown horses when they come in? The buyer doesn't match up with what we've seen from other horses at this level. So you kind of have to say you're assuming improvement here. But we've seen when it's Gallardo, those are generally going to be his best horses at Tampa going over the turf. This one came home well after the 114 opener. They did not slow down, and this horse was still able to make up ground past multiple horses down the stretch. I would expect another good closing kick here. And the fact that, like you said, when you add Flavien Prat, all of a sudden you get a runner every single time here at Keeneland. It's crazy that you can make a flat profit just betting Brown and Prat, who are probably the second most bet jockey and the most bet trainer on the turf, and you're still profitable with the two of them.
Yeah, we'll take it. It's one of those things where, what was it? We see IRAD with some trainers that, especially in Florida, it's like they're 50%. You flip a coin. Is the horse going to win with IRAD aboard or not? Yes or no. That's what you can do there. Last one up for me is going to be the number 6 Rose Collector. A bit of a price hunter here. It's 15-1 in case things get nutty in the final race of the meet at Keeneland. Kent Sweezy gets the horse back. Won on debut at Monmouth Park. Wasn't an overly impressive a buyer speed figure. They were just a 61, but had to come from last of 8, got the win, had the lead at the top of the stretch, and then just shot away, spread away from everyone, was 3.5 lengths clear of the second place horse there. From there, Kent Sweezy went right to Kentucky Downs for the Juvenile Stakes, $500,000 purse. Okay, that wasn't the spot, probably just a little bit too ambitious with the horse. Sent the horse to Tampa. It was a trainer switch, I'm assuming, is because Sweezy just didn't have the license for it. So Julie Stormfelt took over. Horse went to the lead from the inside post there, post 2. Didn't work out, but that's not what this horse has done successfully in the past. Now we're going to be in post 6. Jose Ortiz takes the mount. He is 1-for-3 in the last year riding for Kent Sweezy. This horse at this price makes me intrigued, and getting first-time Lasix, I think, could help as well. So we'll see what Jose Ortiz is able to do. Hopefully takes the horse back and tries to make a big run like this horse did to win on debut.
Yeah, this was one of the ones I looked at for a while. The fact that the 4s in here was an issue for me. The fact the 5s in here is an issue for me. I'm not sure the 6 just clears. And if the 6 just clears, I think it gets a lot more interesting, but the distance also becomes an issue. We've seen both those mile starts struggle. But the fact that they threw this one into back-to-back stakes after that maiden special weight score tells you they definitely think there's a ton of upside. I was a little interested in the 5 horse, Gewürztraminer. That sounds like that sausage place in Los Angeles.
Wiener Schnitzel?
Yeah. Like, well, isn't there another one? I thought there was another one with a better with a G.
I don't know what we should. Gewürztraminer is a type of, it's like a dessert wine. It's very sweet.
I never tried it. Not a big sweet wine fan. Anyway, first time on the grass here. This is another Riley Mott horse, a 20-1, a horse that has some speed, and I think that they believe is a lot more talented than what we have seen. Kind of tips the hand that you may have a runner here. Big price. Didn't include it on the ticket, but one I'm at least interested in.
Hey, that makes sense. I was looking through the chat to see if anybody, Rob was using Gewürztraminer. By collective when the debut on turf, you've got to like that one. I was trying to see it. Nobody else has a strong opinion in this race, but we'll see. We'll see what. Oh no, Shoddy. Oh no, that was last race. Shoddy went 2, 3, 8, 9. No, that was this one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Plenty of places you could go in this race again, but we definitely at least like the 2, 3, and 8. That's going to do it for this episode of the Magic Mike Show. Thanks for joining us to talk about Keeneland's Friday, April 26th, closing day, late pick 5, the last 5 races of the day. I'm not watching Keeneland live right now, so I don't know how it's going, but I know that there was that $286,000 plus carryover for the pick 6 pool. I really wanted that carryover to be into tomorrow, and you were very confident we'd get hit today, so we wouldn't get it. Want to do the pick 6, but hey, we'll deal with the cards we got. If you played the pick 6, good luck to you, and hopefully you cash some tickets if you're listening, or if you're on replay, you did cash some tickets. We'll see if we can get you to cash on Friday as well. We've got our tickets. Well, it still says Aaron. I'm not Aaron.
You're not Aaron.
There we go. I am not Aaron. There we go. I changed everything but that part. We got our tickets down below for the podcast listeners. We'll read it off one last time. I'm going to start. Going to go 2-4 with 269 with 5-6 with 368 with 2-3-6-8. $72 for me, Mr. Sumich.
I'm going to play a $75 ticket here. We're going to go 2-4 with 2-3-4-6-9 with 6 with 1-6-8-10-12 and close it out with the 2-3-8. $75 for 50 cents.
Coming up this weekend, Saturday, we've got the Kentucky Derby draw. I don't actually know what time that is yet. Do you know offhand when that is?
Have they announced it? I think it's between the third and fourth race, but I don't know exactly what time it is. Yeah, they're drawing the full card, I think, during the day, but then they're drawing the Oaks and the Derby during the races, so in between the races.
So we will definitely have coverage of that live on the Racing Dudes YouTube channel. Myself, I'm sure Aaron and possibly Jared will see if he's available to join us as well. Mike won't be available because Mike's going to be busy in Las Vegas doing all things VSiN. What do you guys got planned for this weekend?
Well, I'm actually home this weekend, but I do have the parents in town, so I'm not sure if I'll be able to join you or not there. 9 to noon Eastern, or 9 to noon Pacific, noon to 3 Eastern, the handle over at VSiN. Make sure you check it out. Going through everything from the sports day, a lot of talk about the NFL draft and NFL bets we're going to play coming out of it, where it's going to be an interesting night tonight. We'll see how many trades that we're going to get early and which teams are going to benefit from it. Then we'll be on 2 to 3 Pacific, 5 to 6 Eastern tomorrow to talk NBA NHL playoffs as well on Sharp Money, so make sure you check that out. And then it'll be all roads toward the Derby. We'll be heading over toward the Derby there. VSiN will have you covered wall to wall. Aaron Halterman actually hosting a show on Kentucky Derby Saturday for VSiN with Patrick Maher. So he'll be hosting right before I'll be on there on the handle. So make sure you check that out too. So a lot going on over at VSiN, both the sports side and Derby side. It's going to be a lot of fun being able to cover both the horses and the sports leading up to it. I can't wait for the Derby week next week. It's going to be an absolute blast, man. I think this is a wide open Derby from a underneath perspective, but I'm starting to get more and more confident with the top pick, at least who we're leaning, but we'll talk about that more on Monday.
I'll tease what my top pick is and some horses that I like. I found an interesting stat. Four horses coming into the Kentucky Derby have improved their buyer speed figure every single start of their career. Not like maintained match what they had last out, literally improved every single start. Three of them are trained by Brad Cox. The other one is Sierra Leone, which I was like, Brad Cox has three horses right now in the Kentucky Derby gate. All three of them are improving at the right time. Speaking of Brad Cox, he does have Encino in. That's our boy for the Fantasy League. I don't have a ton of faith that Encino's going to go into the starting gate for the Derby. I have a feeling Cox is going to wait for the Preakness. He had said that they're going to wait until he has his next work, which will be either Friday or Saturday. Both of those will happen before the draw Saturday night. It's not usually a great sign. Like, we want to see how the horse works before we decide to put them into the biggest race of his freaking career.
Yeah, kind of crazy that they seemed like it was like, oh, we're definitely Preakness or Derby. And then it was definitely Derby. And now you're backing off it a little bit. Makes you a little concerned. We may not see Encino in the gate. We'll see what happens. I would expect he's in the draw. And then we'll see whether or not he's going to actually be in the gate the following Saturday or not. If he draws well, I would be surprised if they leave him out. If he draws poorly, I think that's why you pull him. I think that's kind of what the talk is right now.
If he draws the rail, scratch him. If he draws 20, scratch him. If he draws 17, the only post to never give a Kentucky Derby winner in 150 years, keep him in. He's making history. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But
it's interesting you mentioned that. We'll talk about this in depth. But I went back and I looked at the stats that I did because I wrote an article I think Slim and I did a podcast around, I don't remember what it was, a couple of years back. Yep. But updated the stats. And it is wild how much post position matters when you're trying to hit the board. Like before last year, when two Phils hit the board, finished third, the 1-2-3-4 gate, no one had finished in the top four since I think it was 2017. And before that, it was 2013 from those inside posts. So it's not just winning the race, which has been putrid since they switched over to a full field of 20 from those inside posts, but also just being able to finish in the top three has been almost impossible from the 1-4 posts as well. So we'll bring up some of those stats as well on Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun show on Monday. We'll be back here possibly at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific at our usual time. We'll aim for that, but we will let you know for sure what that is. If you do want to be informed on that, you can like the video, subscribe to youtube.com/racingdudes, and hit that notification bell. You'll get alerted anytime we're going to go live. It'll also show up in your YouTube subscriptions page whenever we have the show posted. Usually a few hours beforehand, we have it scheduled out so you can be prepared. Clear your schedule and join us for that. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Curtis Kellewart. He is at Sumobomb18, number 1, number 8. Follow us over there, Corporate Overlords at Racing @FanDuel_dudes. Again, make sure you tune in tonight, FanDuel TV from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific. I'll be on with Joaquin Jaime and Kurt Hoover. You can also check Mike this weekend with the VSiN Network and over on the Handle. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Like I said, we'll see you on Monday. We'll also be live Saturday covering the Derby draw. But until you see us again, I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
Good luck this week.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.